What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
In this episode, I talked to my brother, John Pompliano, all about the financial life of Pablo Escobar. We cover how much money he was making, what he was doing with the money, some of the absurd things that he did as he continued to build his drug empire, and also how people of Colombia viewed him during his rise and ultimate fall. I really enjoyed this conversation with my brother, and I hope that you enjoy it as well. Before we get into this episode, though, I first want to talk about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by OKCoin. They are my favorite place to buy, trade, and stake crypto. They're the fastest growing US-based exchange, serving over 190 countries globally with the easy onboarding and low fees. If you haven't tried them out yet, you should. They're on a mission to make learning about and buying crypto easier than ever. And they're all about bringing more financial literacy to everyone. Something we can always use more of. From being the only exchange to integrate Lightning to contributing over $1 million for Bitcoin core developers, they're doing incredible work to further the Bitcoin ecosystem, and they offer lots of other vetted utility assets from gaming to DeFi. With OKCoin, I feel confident that the future really will be okay. To get started, go to okcoin.com/pomp for some free Bitcoin when you sign up. Again, if you want free Bitcoin, go to okcoin.com/pomp today. Today's episode is brought to you by Fundrise. You all know I believe that the best investors both understand and seek out extreme asymmetry. Fundrise is here to help you do just that. It's the largest direct-to-investor real estate investment platform out there, giving you the opportunity to achieve upside of an asset class previously reserved for institutions and high-net-worth individuals. That's right. Fundrise is making high-end private market real estate investing accessible to everyone via an easy-to-use automated platform. Its 1 million users already know that the investment with Fundrise is capable of producing strong appreciation returns and income generation while helping to stabilize a diversified portfolio. That's more important now than ever in our inflationary environment. See for yourself how over 190,000 other investors have built a better portfolio with private real estate. It takes just a few minutes to get started with as little as $10. Go to fundrise.com/pomp today, and for a limited time, you'll get $10 when you place your first investment. Again, that's fundrise.com/pomp. Go check it out, and when you make your first investment, they'll give you $10 on top of it. fundrise.com/pomp. Today's episode is brought to you by Pipe. Crypto is all about giving the power back to the people, and our sponsor, Pipe, is doing that in a big way. Pipe is the world's first trading platform that allows you to trade recurring revenue streams for upfront capital. And with Pipe's new API, companies with recurring revenue can build seamless embedded financing options into their platforms. One of the most interesting uses for Pipe's new API right now is Compass Mining's Mine Now, Pay Later, which powers payment plans on Bitcoin mining hardware so more miners can start or scale with a smaller upfront investment. Whether you're looking for mining hardware or scaling any business with recurring revenue, check out Pipe to access growth capital with no loans, no dilution, no restrictive covenants or warrants, just growth on your terms. And right now, Pomp Podcast listeners can access tens of thousands of dollars, even millions, fee-free for 12 months. Whether you are a Bitcoin mining company looking to enable financing for your customers, or a SaaS, DTC, or any business that has recurring revenue, sign up at pipe.com/pomp. Again, pipe.com/pomp to start trading today.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
John, what's up, man?
What up?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Yeah?
I got no complaints.
Yeah, I see no your complaints. Guns out, like must be sunny
guns
outside.
Out, yeah. Right? Ready, I won't flex. I don't want to break the camera.
All right. So yesterday we were talking about like, what could we possibly talk about today? And we were like, I don't know. We'll think about it. And then separate conversation, different point in the day. You're like, yo, did you hear Pablo Escobar? And as soon as you told me the stat, I was like, we got to talk about this tomorrow. So where do you want to start with Pablo Escobar, one of the largest drug kingpins of all time?
Yeah, well, let's just start simply. Like, he started off like selling fake diplomas. He was stealing tombstones and then reselling them, which is just a savage thing in itself. But then he started stealing cars, where he got arrested first. And then he worked his way into like organized crime with obviously drug dealing and cocaine, which was his massive enterprise. But he built one of the largest, I'll call it one of the largest drug enterprises in the world.
So he started out as a petty criminal.
Yep.
And then over time he built it up. He almost became more serious, larger scale, more ambitious over time, until eventually became this massive multinational drug business.
I mean, you see here his mugshot here on the left, and then you see a pile of cash on the right. And obviously, transporting and money laundering is huge for these guys. So they used to use a bunch of Chinese people over there in Asia. So they would take USD, try to transfer it through an Asian or a Chinese bank or an Asian bank, and then transfer it back to Mexico to get Mexican pesos, right?
Yep.
So the whole plan was just kind of, how do we convert the cash from USD and get it back to Mexico without being traced, right? So in the height of his career, I'll call it, and I want to also note something real quick, Pablo Escobar, not a good guy at all, right? He used force to get a lot of what he wanted, and that's how he became very, very violent, and that's how he became very, very popular. So I'm not advocating to do this at all, but he made $420 million a week, which comes out to be $22 billion a year.
Whoa, rewind. Pablo Escobar and his enterprise, they were making $500 million a week. Yep. At the top?
Yep. He produced about 80% in the 80s. He produced about 80% of the cocaine that was consumed in the world.
Okay, so him and his enterprise create 80% of the cocaine in the world. They're booking $420 million a week in revenue, $22 billion a year. Keep going.
$22 billion a year, but by the time he died, he was only worth about $30 billion, right?
Why?
So that's, well, he spent a lot of money, frankly, right? Like he was a philanthropist. He did build a lot in Mexico. He did invest a lot. He was an economic developer in the nation. But when you're raking in $420 million, I'm sure that you waste a little bit, right? So we'll get to it in some wild facts in a second. But he was burning money. He was storing money. He was losing it, everything under the sun. But yeah, he was, that $30 billion back then would be the equivalent of about $64 billion today.
Okay, so even though he had by far the largest drug enterprise in the world, he wouldn't even be the richest person in today's dollar terms, but he would definitely be top 20 for sure. On top of that, when you were telling me about this and his whole philanthropic activities, I then told you, I said, you should go watch the movie American Gangster, right? Yeah. Because Frank Lucas was doing similar stuff where he'd hand out the turkeys on Thanksgiving, etc., to essentially say, hey, I got you as a community. I got you. You guys got me. I got you. But also, I rule with an iron fist, and if there's any problems, then the violent side can come out.
I treat it like the mob, where they rob you, and then they say, if you want protection from being robbed, you should pay us. I treat it similar to that. It's almost like forcing it upon them. Like I'm sure they liked it, but it wasn't anything crazy. But yeah, he was a philanthropist. You know, he was a congressman.
I did know that only because I watched a movie about it. But explain what happened. He basically just ran for a political office.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how it works, right? He basically forced his way into a Congress seat in 1982, I believe. And then 2 years later, obviously, he was a notorious kingpin at the time, and they removed him from the Congress seat.
So he was elected in a free and fair election.
Yeah. However you want to call that. Similar to how Putin gets reelected.
Okay, so he got elected to Congress, probably spent a lot of money, bought a lot of influence, let's call it. And then 2 years later, he was forced to resign after a campaign that exposes criminal activities. That's wild. But now say this second, because this was the stat that kicked off this entire conversation. What did he try to do with Mexico's debt?
This is genius by him. Mexico was in about $10 billion of debt. And he tried to say, if I pay your $10 billion of debt as a nation, I think that I should not be extradited anywhere around the world. You should not have to abide to any extradition treaties anywhere, because I'm basically taking care of this country, right?
So the country of Mexico in the late 1980s, they had $10 billion of sovereign debt. The country was in debt, $10 billion. And he had the $10 billion. And he said, I will pay off the country's debt so that Mexico can be free of debt. But in exchange, no matter whatever happens in the world, you cannot let anyone come and take me.
Exactly. And as we know, a lot of the story is he did not do that. And Mexico did not accept his money because that's a ridiculous offer, I think. But yeah, and then you just kind of go down the line, right? You're talking about how does he not have more money today than anyone else? Basically,
oh, I'm sorry. It was in Colombia, not Mexico is what he was trying to pay
off. Excuse me, Colombia. All of this in Colombia. But yeah, he also, when he was on the run in 1992, 1993, he notoriously apparently burned $2 million to keep his daughter warm. So freezing, you're on the run, you're in a hideout place. He put $2 million of cash in a pile and burned it and had her sit next to the fire. It's not a fire log, obviously. That probably burned very, very quickly. But burning $2 million to keep your daughter warm just shows that's what the kind of guy was, right? He wasn't worried about the money aspect of it. He was obviously already on the run at that point. And then he spent an estimated $2,500 a month on rubber bands to keep his money. $2,500 a month. That's more than people pay in rent just to keep rubber bands to keep your money in. It's absolutely ridiculous the amount of money that he was making throughout his
time.
Dude,
these are wild stats. 10% or $2 billion a year. They just chalked it up and said, oh, yeah, the rats are going to eat it?
Well, he would store money in warehouses, different facilities, his house. He would store it in just open fields because he had so much money, he had nowhere to put it. And then obviously rats and weather and everything can destroy cash dollar bills. So he would lose, apparently notorious to his brother, he'd lose about 10% or $2.1 billion a year.
Yeah. Did the people of Colombia like him?
From everything I read, there's definitely mixed feelings because he was such a big philanthropist. He built over 70 soccer fields. He built a zoo in Colombia and everything like that. So it obviously, like, he was a big philanthropist, but I think people know when you rule with an iron fist, you're not the most loved individual in the world. It goes back to that, would you rather be loved or hated? And I think he was a little bit of both.
You know that I went to the zoo?
In his compound?
In Colombia? Hacienda Napoles,
yep.
I think is how you pronounce it.
We're going to get to that.
Hold on, go ahead. Tell me about Hacienda Napoles. I went there physically. I was on the ground. I went and saw it.
I'm going to talk about one thing before we get to that. Is I don't know if you guys are aware, but Pablo Escobar was on the Forbes billionaire list for 4 or 5 straight years, even though he was a criminal and on the run from the United States. So this is from 1987, the first time he made the billionaires list. It states in the article that he was not only a U.S. fugitive, but he was also had a net worth of approximately $3 billion in 1987. This was closer to the height of his career. I think that is extremely understated. And so does Pablo's son, because he's quoted saying, Forbes couldn't have, can't, and won't ever have access to it, to or review the accounting books from mobsters, so they can't calculate their alleged fortunes, not even close to the real figures. So that just speaks to, like, these guys don't keep, and they might, but they don't share accounting books, they don't share what their revenue is, what their profit is, right? So everything that Forbes did in these past few years when he was on the Forbes billionaire list was a guess. They had no clue, right? So
he probably had more money than they were saying.
That's exactly what his son is saying, is you guys have absolutely no clue. The way mobsters work is they don't do public filings. They don't tell you what their revenue is up front. Everything works behind the scenes, and that's exactly what he did. I think he was worth well over $3 billion at this point, considering how much money he was making.
All right, now tell me about Hacienda Napoles.
All right, Hacienda Napoles is an absolute compound, dude. He built a house.
It's on the top of this mountain so he can see 360 degrees around if anyone's coming.
Yeah, he built it. It cost him about $60 million to build. There's the original plane from apparently the first trip he did with cocaine to the United States. And that is the entrance to the compound right there. But the compound has an airport, several swimming pools, a man-made lake, a private zoo with exotic birds, hippopotamuses.
I fed a hippo at Hacienda Napoles. They still have it.
Notoriously, once... a bullfighting ring as well, but notoriously once they came in and took over his compound, once he was dead and everything, there was 4 hippos left, and the hippos started reproducing, and there's now hundreds of hippos that are just from those 4, and those are the only animals that kind of stayed in the compound.
Yeah. So what's fascinating?
They turned it into a museum with an amusement park, basically.
They sell tickets to it. You can go. If you go to Colombia, you can buy a ticket. You can go to this compound. You also can walk around. They have fake dinosaurs. Yep. Like they have like life size.
Those were there when he
put those there because no one would be crazy enough to put that stuff there later. And then they have like kind of like a museum area where basically it's documenting his rise, fall, and ultimate death. But you want to know the craziest part about it is as you're walking up to it, and like you still can go in this bull fighting kind of arena and everything, is the Colombian government built a massive prison on the grounds as well. And it almost felt a little bit like, oh, you know, you ran from us for so long, like whatever, like they've preserved this. Cause I'm assuming they're making money off of it. Right. Yep. As this like a thing that people can go to. But my guess is that they put the prison there, as well as just like,
F you.
There's irony in the fact that we built a Colombian prison on the ground.
Was that the one that he built?
That Pablo,
because Pablo Escobar, he in 1989, when I said he was ruling with such authority and such violence, was he apparently killed a government informant by bombing an airplane, right? And obviously, he went to jail for that. But the way he got around this was he built his own jail in Colombia where he would be housed. And in the most lavish Pablo Escobar fashion, he built an exceptional jail. This jail had a nightclub.
This is not the one on his compound.
Yeah. So his jail that he built has a nightclub, a sauna, a waterfall, telephones, computers, and everything you can think of. Look, he escaped from the jail after in 1992 and then went on the run. And that's when he died in 1993. He died in a shootout with the police.
So bear with us here. This is me saying this. I believe this is a video of the prison. We can play it again. There's a road that you walk up from that where the plane is as you walk towards the compound. And what you'll see here is like this is the prison. It did not look like the most hospitable conditions. If this is the one that I saw,
yeah.
It literally like it looked like there was almost chain linked prisons outside. So it's pretty crazy. But all right, when you think about Escobar, you think that total net worth got to be about in today's term 65 billion?
I think it was closer with if he sold equity in his company, for example, something like that. I think he was closer worth somewhere around $100 billion to $120 billion.
Yeah, so basically he'd be top five richest people in the world in today's dollars, but obviously it was nefarious purposes. But he definitely ran a multinational corporation in terms of logistics, finance, distribution, marketing, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, I mean, he knew how to, one, use people and the loyalty and the violence to kind of get what he wanted. But look, he built a massive enterprise, and that goes along with he used politicians, he used local individuals, he used trade routes. Like, he used everything in his hands. And outside of his hands, frankly, to get control on to make this enterprise successful. And yeah. To be frank, he did.
It's crazy to think about.
He was also nicknamed Robin Hood.
Yeah, they did. They did call him.
Seems to be throwing around a little bit too much these days.
But here's what I'll say. There's a few folks who I think are from Colombia, actually, who are in the chat right now. And one of the things you have to remember is that like somebody can get their revenue or their income from nefarious ways, judged by both their local government, but also the international community, yep. Which I think most people would say, hey, that's what's going on here. But they still can do good things for the people of their country, as he was doing. And so what it ends up doing is like, depending on who you ask, good guy, bad guy, right? Like some of these people are very, very complex, and you can have bad people who also do good things. You also can have good people who do bad things. And so I think it's just, it's fascinating to see the life of somebody who, especially in the United States, has now been celebritized in a way because for whatever reason, American culture really likes
he's
violence,
right?
Guns, drugs, money, you know, all that type of stuff. And there's now, you know, all these different videos and movies and stuff.
I mean, when you're making $420 million a week, you would assume someone's going to do a documentary or just like document the story, right?
Yeah, that's a crazy yeah. thing. All right, where can we send people to follow you on Twitter? Maybe
follow me on Twitter at John Pompliano, JohnPompliano. Couldn't make it more simple for you. First and last name.
Oh, you're a genius. You're an absolute genius.
It's no Pomp Global, but.
All right. Thank you for coming on tomorrow. What is your criteria going to be for topics? Joe said just what he's interested in. What is your criteria going to be?
Anything I think the people will be interested in. So ooh. DM me ideas on what you guys want to hear about. I will do the research. I'll come present it to you and we'll get down to the facts.
A little learning. Facts and truth.
Facts.
Yeah. Well, don't tell
do
the
ifs, ands, and buts.
Don't tell the ministry of truth. Don't tell the ministry of truth. They may shut you down.
Yeah.
The disinformation governance board.
Yeah. In 2 days, we're going to create a new board.
All right. I appreciate you coming on. We'll talk again tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed this one. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. And if you're looking to try to transition to get a new job in the Bitcoin or crypto industry, we've got you covered. Head over to pompscryptocourse.com. We've developed a curriculum with the top teams across the industry. It's a 3-week intensive training program with over 50 events packed into that 3-week time period. Go to pompscryptocourse.com to learn more, and I'll meet you guys for the next episode.